Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. We've made it. It's halfway through the year. So this week we decided to round up some of our absolute favourites of the first 6 months of 2018, as well as previewing our most anticipated releases for the second half of the year. I'm Jake Cunningham, and joining me this week, we've got Kelly Powell.
Hello.
She's back from Italy. She's looking radiant.
Thank you.
We've got Sam Howlett.
Hi.
He's returned from East London. He's looking less radiant.
I don't feel radiant. I got half sunburnt yesterday wearing a vest in the garden.
Oh.
I was in the garden for about half an hour as well.
Don't make me think of you in a vest.
And a giant elephant on it.
Lovely.
Please keep it PG.
Yeah. And Campbell Campbell's here. And
hello.
He's looking wonderful, despite not eating breakfast.
I know. I've sacrificed everything for this pod. It's very important to me. In other words, I'm going to be talking to you about show dogs today.
So I've asked everyone to send me their three favourite films of the year so far and the three that they're most looking forward to. Kelly, we'll start with you. What's been your number one?
You Were Never Really Here.
Yes, and so when I formatted this show, I thought it'd be a great idea. I'll get such a great selection of films to talk to, a wide variety, at least 9 different films, failing to think that obviously everyone's going to pick You Were Never Really Here.
Oh, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's probably my favourite film of the year.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's mine as well.
Probably one of mine.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so boring.
But Kelly, why is this up there for you?
I just thought it was... It's just a standout film in this, in the sense that, like, you don't really see that kind of film that often anymore. Mm. And she's just such a fearless director. And she sticks to what she does. Mm. And she doesn't give about anybody else's opinion. She just kind of does what she needs to do.
Yeah. When people talk about, like, a fearless director, like, it springs to mind ideas of kind of being brash and overly ambitious. Mm. And, like, things like The Revenant and things like... But...
Sorry. Yeah. Casual reaction.
But You Were Never Really Here is all about, like, I think the bravery in it comes from stripping it down and removing things that people otherwise might say is brave. And you're just getting to the skeletal idea of what you need for the story. And that's what's really impressive about it.
I think skeletal is the key word for this film. It completely strips away any kind of fat or even, like, any muscle or anything in the film. It just shows you this bare bones of a character and, like, the blueprints of a story. You know, when we did the show, we talked about how the book has this kind of complex, labyrinthine, political conspiracy going on, and Lim Ramsey's like, nah, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to see, it's all about this guy. Is it Joe? You guys know? Yeah. Yeah. I just want to see Joe.
Joe Cup.
Joe Hammer.
Mm. And I know when we talk about David Lynch, people say, like, yeah, he just makes the same film. And last week I went to see Morven Callor in the cinema, and first time I've seen that in about 8 years or so, and it just got me thinking, yeah, she's the same. She's so focused on character, and it's just about using the form in the neatest way possible to focus on that character and reflect their psyche. And what I think Morven Callor does, it uses light in a really interesting way. It opens and closing with these flashing lights. One's a Christmas tree, one's a nightclub. Mm. And throughout, you've got images of lighters and lamps and the sun and lighters going out and people not having lighters. And it just means that there's constant back and forth of light and dark. And that, to me, was a reflection of Morven Keller's psychology throughout the film. And she's using the same idea, but approaching it through editing in You Were Never Really Here. And that's how she's breaking into that fragmented mind. Mm. Like, it's amazing to watch a master, and just such an unassuming one as well.
I was going to say, like, with you saying the editing was quite an important part of You Were Never Really Here, I think a particularly important part was also the sound design, because I saw two cuts of it. I saw one at LFF and then one that was on release. And I think there was a slight difference in the ending, but then there was also, I think, I may be wrong about this, but it felt like the sounds had been played up a lot. So a lot of the film draws your attention to a lot of sounds around Joe, so it just starts feeling a bit like boxed in. So there's crowds just sound deafening, and cars, so do cars and everything. And then there's also these kind of flashes back to moments from Joe's past, but it's not really given any context. So Ramsay, as she normally does, she likes to drop you in without context. So there's a lot of these sounds that you just hear, and these horrible, like, haunting noises, and the film kind of drip feeds you the context as to what is happening when you hear those things. But for the rest of the part, it's just this bewildering look into Joe's mind, and it's really overwhelming, especially from the beginning when you don't really know what's happening. You just see this kind of foul deed unfold, and then these haunting sounds afterwards.
All right, let's move on to your second choice then, Kelly. I think that might be Lucretia Martel's Sama. Cavalier's raised his fists in joy at the mention of that one. I think we've got it's another overlap there for one of your choices too.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm.
Also, fearless director, I think. I mean, what she did with that film, the first time I saw it, I was really, I didn't know what to make of it. And it was one of those films that, like, the more you thought about it and the more you dissected it, the better it was. And upon second watching, it was just like, whoa, this film is amazing. And even the pod that we did, I enjoyed that conversation so much, because there's just so much to dissect. Mm. Just with what, like, how multi-layered it was, the cinematography was gorgeous. Also, sound design was amazing. And it was really funny, actually.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great film.
Absolute banger of a soundtrack. And Campbell, why is this on your list too?
I was going to say almost purely because of the Brazilian surf rock.
Yes. Yeah. Los Indios Tabajares. So good. If you haven't listened to them. Yeah. I actually, because there wasn't one on Spotify, I built a Zama soundtrack playlist. If anyone wants the link, I will share it around. That's public.
This is my work soundtrack now.
Oh, it's so good. And looks absolutely amazing as well. And probably one of my favourite final shots of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Just filled with so many mixed emotions about freedom and hopelessness at the same time. And extremely serene, and it's really lovely. And this is all, and I think it all does go back to this music that gives. It's quite unnerving how chilled out it is in relation to the events we're seeing.
I was going to say it's a really great ironic touch, because it kind of gives this impression of this, like, island paradise and stuff, which is what I imagine, like, a lot of colonialists thought when they were heading out to these exotic lands, but all they really find there is just depression and ennui. I thought that was a really great touch, and then also interspersed with those just really loud kind of electronic tones, like the descending one that happens when Zama is having a particular kind of moment of crisis, and you're just kind of this wonderful performance where you just kind of stare past whoever he's talking to, and this tone will just, like, drop. Yeah. It's really wonderful.
Yeah.
Great appearance by a llama as well.
Yeah, fantastic llama.
One of my favourites in film.
So that's got Lucretia Martel's kind of futile colonial tale, Zama. And that's still out in cinemas as well. And I think it is one of this year's real cinema releases. Like, you want this on a big screen. It's so lush and so rich.
Yeah. It's the film as well that I think's got the most kind of small but passionate, like, fan base in a weird way, because all over Twitter it's been people going, like, it's, you know, it was a week after the Avengers or something, they were like, please, everyone see Zama. Like, you need to see Zama.
Yeah, we had Hannah from Little White Lies here to talk about that as well. And that magazine gave it, like, 5 stars across the board. And David Jenkins even highlighted it as, like, this is one of the 21st century masterpieces. I really take this opportunity to go and watch this film.
You really want to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, wonderful. And your third choice?
So Lean on Pete's my third choice. I just love Andrew Haig so much. I'm one of his biggest fans.
You're one of the Haigheads, as they call them.
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't care for that.
Well, it's like Tom Hiddleston and Cumberbatch. It's like everyone's a Haighead. Come on, we're all Haigheads.
Yeah, I think we can come up with a more elegant term.
Yeah. I just thought that this was a beautiful movie. I don't know, maybe I was just really moved by it. And I thought that it was also really understated. I really like how he also just sort of places you in this world and you sort of have to figure your way through it through the eyes of Charlie. And
so this is a horse and his boy, really.
A horse and his boy.
just to give a brief bit of background for those that haven't watched it, this is about a young boy who kind of rescues a horse that's going to be put down and takes it on this odyssey across Middle America, really.
Yeah.
And that it's pretty light on any other events. What it is.
Exactly. It's also a character study, I think. And I like slow cinema, and I think that he sort of took his time letting us get to know this boy. And we sort of follow his journey, and I think that I just related to him deeply.
I think it's a nice entry point for people to find Charlie Plummer as well, because this first played at Venice. He won the Young Actor Award, but then All the Money in the World came out, and obviously that got a lot of press, and that came out before this did in the UK, and then that was the kind of thing that broke him through to people. But this is a much more different performance. He's quite manic and frenetic in All the Money in the World, and I don't think like anyone's going to really remember that performance. And it may be a shame that this came a couple of months after that, and there wasn't as much interest.
Mm. I think this is one of the great like child performances of the year so far as well.
Mm. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's move around the table, Camille. Let's take your choices. What's your number one?
Well, mine wasn't in any particular order. I had Zama at the top, I guess.
Yeah.
Fantastic that ready choice. To go. We've already kind of talked about how wonderful and weird that is. I immediately after watching it, I was quite confounded. Like, just, I hadn't really seen a film like that in the cinema for a really long time, if ever, because it just kind of has this really strange, like, sensational feel to it. Mm. So you can kind of really feel the heat.
It's using that sound and image to create this odd sensation of touch, which is one of the senses that cinema really shouldn't be able to do. Unless we could go to the Zama 4DX screening, but like, it really kind of reaches out to you, and you feel almost quite sticky watching
sweaty.
It.
Yeah. It's a sweaty movie. Everyone just like looks really uncomfortable throughout. It's really kind of great to see, especially none. More than, the guy playing Zama. I can't remember the actor's name, but he has this really great, just deeply uncomfortable performance as he just kind of gets ritually humiliated over this film's running time. And Kelly mentioned earlier the scene with the llama as well, which kind of, there's moments in this film which are just so odd, but they're so funny and just grim at the same time because, like, this... almost like farcical, like just appearance of this llama. Just almost, it feels like this extra step to humiliate this guy who just wants to get the hell off this island.
Yeah.
But it just appears as this kind of purgatory for him, this very bright, lush purgatory. But he just hasn't really, he doesn't do anything. He has this role that has this very self-important title, but
redundant.
Yeah.
Totally redundant, yeah.
And he just kind of spends his time being mocked by the kind of native population. As like, at the beginning, we just see him like peeking at some women changing and stuff, and he gets yelled at being a voyeur. And it's not exactly, it doesn't give the impression of someone of high stature.
Yeah. So that's one of the essential cinema viewings of the year. And I think your next choice is definitely one that I would agree with, as it's the one that I can remember having the most physical reaction to any film. And that's 120 BPM.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Show Dogs.
No, it's Patrick. Come on.
Yeah, BPM I feel like I came to quite late because I heard all of the buzz from the festival circuit and everything. And people raving just like, this is the best film of the year. But people were saying this in 2017. So it was a little strange to say it's my favorite film of this year.
So, to you, like, before you watched it, to you, what was this film?
I mean, it was just something I'd heard a lot of good things about. It was kind of just existed in the abstract for me because I haven't really watched any trailers, so I'd only read briefly about it.
I find talking to people about it who maybe haven't followed the film's journey through its festivals and release, try and talk to someone about it, it'll initially come up like a vegetable film. It's good to eat. It's like a Ken Loach.
What, 2.5 hour AIDS drama?
Yeah, it's exactly.
That's the last thing anyone wants to see.
Yeah. That's a tough sell. Mm. But then everyone's coming out of the other end of it completely changed.
Yeah.
Because it's got this kind of, it's got this emotional honesty to it. It doesn't just, it's not a really grim portrait of that movement. Also, more importantly, it's a non-American perspective of the AIDS crisis, which is like, it just feels, it feels more essential. And it's also got this very authentic style to it. It's just kind of this fly on the wall filmmaking, but in a fictional feature. It's got this like emotional honesty to it, so it takes a lot of the good with the bad. So there's a lot of things that you see behind closed doors, and you see how this fear of the AIDS crisis kind of seeps into these kind of LGBTQIA people's everyday lives. And it kind of gives this film so much more urgency because you identify so much more with this just need to have, be able to have this space to themselves without being fearful. Mm. And it just, it does so well to just kind of drum up this kind of want to protest. And you kind of come out of the film wanting to just throw some blood at a corrupt government office or something. But its frankness is what really got to me, along with this really wonderful, these very kind of lyrical ways. It's these very lyrical images where it's like the nightclub kind of folds into like kind of dust particles and then into blood cells. Yeah. And this refrain is amazing.
An exercise in editing. It's absolutely phenomenal. You go from these protest scenes in this classroom and then people are arguing and their arms are throwing up as like protest gestures, and then within an instant, and you haven't noticed, that same arm is the arm that's in the nightclub.
Yeah.
And as you say, then it moves into these particles, and then that moves into the genes and the DNA breaking down, and then we're back in another room and we're back in the daytime and you've barely noticed it go by, and like this trajectory of images that is completely seamless and quite experimental to tie into a narrative piece like that. It's phenomenal.
And for what is essentially partly a film about people dying, it's so like energetic and kinetic, and the camera's always moving and everyone is moving and shouting, and like you say, the dance sequences, the protests, their the kind of debates they have in their meetings, everything's so full of like movement
and life.
Yeah,
and it's actually showing things and talking about things. Like I went to a talk at the BFI during Flair, and discussing BPM, and Pride, the British film from, I think, was it 2013, was raised. And it's like, that's happening in England in the late 80s, and the only addressing of the AIDS crisis at that point is one character who doesn't even mention it by name and is just who is given one scene, and that's it.
Mm.
And this actually looks at it head on and doesn't just like submit to it either as well. It's not just lots of people standing around crying. As you say, there's energy, there's life to it, and that's what
it's about. That, but it's not about that.
It's great that a film that about a subject that was kind of considered taboo, maybe even today, like it's kind of this unspoken thing that people don't want to talk about, it's great that it approaches it with such like directness and honesty. I was also going to say about the editing, just kind of quickly going back to that, is that for a 2.5 hour film, it's got a really great flow to it.
I did not feel that long.
There was like the kind of centerpiece is that sex scene between the two main characters. That kind of, it's this kind of twisting of limbs and everything that will like then transition into a flashback to do with the past of each character and how they kind of got to where they were, and it all just seamlessly blends together in this one really kind of moving piece. It's completely stunning to watch.
I was going to say, AIDS in film is usually like melodrama or metaphor. People say, "Oh, the thing's about AIDS," or like Dawn of the Dead. These films are all about AIDS. It's like, but at least this film isn't like hiding behind a metaphor.
Yeah.
They say it's fully confronting it. No, this film is about that.
Yeah.
We're going to attack it.
Yeah, and so we've spoken about two films that you must see in the cinema, and I think your third choice, Camberley, is notoriously one that you won't.
I really wish I could have seen this one in the cinema. My third choice is Annihilation, a sci-fi film in the kind of grand tradition of Tarkovsky. Because it's just this really, it uses the kind of other of this giant shimmer thing. It uses that to just focus in on this character played by Natalie Portman and her tendency towards like self-destruction in her grief. And
so, just to set this up, when you say this shimmer, this is almost like a giant psychedelic window that's appeared in the world, and through that window, everything beyond it has an extreme level of evolution.
Yeah, so everything in it is constantly changing and mutating. So the moment you see it for the first time, it's just, it kind of looks like, you know, when you see like maybe oil on the ground and lights reflecting of it, and it's this kind of weird rainbow effect. So you see that from the outside, and there's a lot of kind of uncanniness to it, because I read the book recently as well, so I might be mixing it up, but there's a moment when they enter, I think it's reflected in the film by just a very jarring cut, but everyone forgets how they got in, so they end up like maybe a couple of miles into the zone, they forget, and there's this really discomforting feeling to it, because it's just Garland does so well to just portray it as nothing like the natural world. He kind of leaves behind the kind of clean cut minimalism of something like Ex Machina. It just goes full on like psychedelic. So very early on, you'll see things like mutating crocodiles and like giant crocodiles, and later on, this utter nightmare creature, the bear.
I love the bear. That's one of my scenes of the year.
Yeah.
The bear thing.
Yeah.
The bear with the human face.
That's the sixth part of the Stieg Larsson trilogy. Sorry.
I really wish I could remember what they'd actually called it during production, but little fun fact.
I do remember.
You do?
It's Homerton.
Yeah, it's Homerton, because the people who designed the bear had also worked on Paddington. So they were like, this is a horrible bear. So instead of Paddington, we've got to name it after a bad train station. So they named it Homerton.
There are also loads of like evil bears hanging around Homerton station.
Yeah.
Don't go there.
No.
Right, so talking about evil creatures and evil things, let's move on to Sam Howlett.
A seamless bridge. Only get on that bridge and go to Hereditary. Yeah, I think this might be my film of the year thus far.
Ooh, I like horror.
Yeah, I do like horror.
This is that stigma about genre that has been mentioned so often.
But it is a horror.
It is a horror.
But I like that about it, that it just is. Because I was watching this, I was so pleased by the last 20 minutes when it goes proper.
Me too.
Like wild, classic horror culty stuff that I love. Like those are the horror films that my dad watched and I really like. And I'm so done with, what if the real horror was in your mind?
I know, yeah.
Actually do something horrible. Like that's why I didn't get along with the Babadook and stuff like that. Just like, just do it.
The real horror was the friends we made along the way.
Yeah.
The real horror
certainly
as well.
True of this room.
But yeah, you're right. And I know some people have come out for Hereditary and be like, yeah, it's quite good, but the last half hour, I just wish they'd kept up with this, you know, the whole metaphor of it. And I was like, no, it's a horror film. Yeah. I want them to just like plunge into the horror and be like, all right, now let's go for it.
Yeah, and like the last half an hour of the film ties into things that are being set up the whole way.
Yeah.
It wouldn't make sense if it just lost them. And I imagine when he was pitching this film,
yeah,
because of what was popular at the time and stuff like The Witch and films like that and those new horrors where you don't really see the horror and It Follows and things, he would have had a tough time trying to sell them on that more fantasy element of it. But I'm really happy that he did.
Yeah, and I think, so I've seen it twice now, and I think this is the third time I've spoken about it on the podcast because like the, you know, people tweeting in reviews and stuff. But I really feel like there's more a sense of humour in the film that other people don't seem to... I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I really feel like...
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I really feel there's a full-on sense of, like, cackling glee.
Yes.
That he's got. I mean, there's like, the scene. I won't say what it is, but there's the moment. And the way... But they go back to a shot of that moment that I think is only there to be like, ha-ha, to the audience. Like, you got this, now you got this. It's like, oh, God, he's doing it!
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it. And I love films like this in a cinema with a group of people that are like really terrified and are...
Oh, that was so me. I've never been more scared.
Yeah, it's really and it's really scary. Horror films aren't often they're not always scary anymore. And this is a really scary film.
I think I like that it doesn't opt for kind of moment to moment scares so much as that you said plunging you into the horror. it just kind of lets you sit with a lot of really horrible images. So it won't like flash something, it will just show you something horrible for a very long time, or wait until you notice it.
So the big moment that Sam is mentioning, there is a particular character involved in that situation, and immediately following that, it's just a close-up that's unbroken.
Yeah, for a very long
time. And it feels endless. Even though I knew in my head nothing's going to happen, it's just a close-up, I couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there, just like, and all like, I can't just look at this person's face.
There's like three or four shots where I remember thinking, okay, cut. Okay, cut. Okay, cut. Please. Cut. Please cut. Cut. Why are you cutting? What's going on? The reel is broken. It's not cutting.
Yeah. Harry, please.
Harry, please cut. Please write cut on the script.
All right. So that's Hereditary. One of your other choices was You Were Never Really Here. I think we've covered that. Yeah. And the final choice, which I think, we would probably all pick, were we given a few more slots, is Phantom Thread.
Another horror film. This is about a possessed...
It's a gothic romance.
Phantom Thread. I think, again, with Hereditary, there's a streak of humour going through it that isn't that obvious, but is definitely there. I don't think you call your main character Reynolds Woodcock if you're taking your film entirely seriously.
Well, when him and Daniel Day-Lewis, or Paul Thomas Anderson and Daniel Day-Lewis were writing this character... They just had that name as a placeholder, as a silly name.
Yeah.
And then, just stick with it.
And just when they say things like, how dare you do that in a dress from the House of Woodcock? This isn't a totally serious film, is it?
No.
It's so fun, considering how kind of stately it is. You know, it's set in this post-war 1950s London townhouse, and it's about a dressmaker who falls in love with a waitress. I mean, it sounds tedious as hell.
It sounds like ITV drama.
Yeah, it sounds really something that could be, frankly, quite boring, but it's injected with such a, three quite weird performances in a way. It's Daniel Day-Lewis, Vicky Creeps, and Leslie Manville. It's got some of the best swearing in film, I think. We can't say it now, but there's some killer lines, some savage takedowns over the breakfast table.
Oh, yeah. Serious.
Yeah.
Don't mess with Cyril.
Don't mess with Cyril. What does she say? I'll go through you or something.
I'll go right through you.
And it's like, I'll go through you, mate. That's how she says it.
Come on, then.
Come on, then.
Square up.
Yeah. Square go, like.
Cyril, get the strap.
it's got these little surprising character moments littered through it. It doesn't have much in terms of plot, but that's not what Paul Thomas Anderson's ever that interested in.
It's also extremely sexy for a film that does not show anything like that.
It is very sexy.
Just bits of food being cooked and dresses being made and just like the pressing of fabric against
titillating.
Extremely slow.
It's a good word.
Yeah.
That's a Reynolds Woodcock word.
Yeah.
This is simply titillating.
On that wonderful accent, maybe.
And this morning, do you know what I ate this morning, guys?
Asparagus.
Porridge.
Oh my god. The way.
Thicker cream.
Bit naughty.
But it's good to have in the house.
Good to have around the house.
I just want to say, shout out.
Would you like some porridge?
I just can't believe
he needs some porridge. He hasn't had breakfast.
It's very important to me. And also, speaking of porridge, I just want to shout out to Vicky Creeps for the moment when they're kind of on holiday or whatever, and she just kind of gets rid of all decorum and eats her porridge like an absolute savage. And it's the funniest, like literally like teeth grinding against the spoon bag.
Oh yeah, like when it gets into the sound design, when she's trying to annoy him, like the sound of her knife on toast. Yeah.
It's the loudest toast
you just
I've ever.
Can't have confrontation in the morning.
No,
simply cannot.
We'll move on in a second just to cover quickly our most anticipated films.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right, so we've only got a few minutes, but we will quickly go ahead and preview what our favourites are coming up in the next 6 months. I've already been lucky enough to see a few at Cannes, like Cold War, which is going to be out on the 31st of August on Curzon Home Cinema and In Cinemas. I think that won the Best Director Award.
It did.
Yeah, that's the follow-up to Ida from Pavel Pavlikovsky. But I've asked you again to quickly send me your three most anticipated releases. So let's go the other way around the table and start with Sam.
In a few weeks' time, we've got Incredibles 2, which, hey, maybe one of us has already seen. Can't confirm.
Yeah.
Can confirm because the embargo's up. I have seen it, and it's really great. the moment you hear the Giacchino, I was like, oh, I like this film. And it starts, like, immediately as the first film ends. There's none of this, like, oh, what is Dash doing now that he's 30? Yeah, it starts with the battle with the Underminer, which is the sort of exclamation mark of the last film. And it goes straight from there. And as the film goes on, they kind of switch roles. So Elastigirl is now back in action. And Mr. Incredible Bob Parr is left to deal with the kids at home. But it's really fun. The action is incredible. Elastigirl is a really cool motorbike. And there's a really cool scene on a monorail.
Yeah, we've got an interview.
Yeah, I had a great interview with two of the producers on the film, so we'll be playing that in a few weeks' time. They're really fun. It's just, yeah, I think it's the most fun I've had in the cinema this year.
Great.
Looking forward to that. My next film I'm looking forward to is Widows, the Steve McQueen film.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't really paying much attention to in the preamble. I like Shame, I like Hunger, I like 12 Years a Slave. I knew that he was doing this next film, which was going to be like an action film based on a Linda LaPlante book, which was a TV movie in the 80s, and I thought, okay, like, didn't pay attention to it. Watched the trailer, fully in. So you've got a gang of thieves led by Liam Neeson who are killed in a robbery that goes wrong, and it's about their widows who then have to pick up where they left off. And it's Viola Davis in the lead role, and it looks phenomenal.
Yeah, that trailer got such a huge reaction on social media as well. There's a particular moment of Daniel Kaluuya waving, which is going to be mean.
and Daniel Kaluuya's in it, yeah. And Paperboy from Atlanta.
Brian Tyree Henry.
Yeah.
Love him.
Right. They look great in it.
And the last one.
The last one I'll quickly talk about is Halloween. I love the Halloween franchise, and I was very sceptical of another one. But it's got the blessing of John Carpenter. It's been directed by David Gordon Green. It's co-written by Danny McBride, which is phenomenally weird. Mm. And also, Jamie Lee Curtis is back. This film is going to completely ignore every Halloween sequel. So this is like a new Halloween 2. It's set, you know, 30-odd years after the first film. And this is what happens when Michael comes back home. And again, with Widows, the trailer really confirms how excited I am for this film. It could be terrible, but the trailer looks it's really fun, really old-fashioned, and I can't wait.
From the director of Your Highness.
And The Sitter.
And so, Camilla, you've highlighted a film that played at Cannes. I wasn't able to see it, but very excited about it.
Oh, BlacKkKlansman. Mm. I am so excited about this. I was going to say it's been a while since Spike Lee's made something truly great, but I was one of the people who really loved Chirac.
We did that on this podcast, and we were big fans of it as well.
Yes.
We're the other ones.
I'm with my people.
That was us.
There are dozens of us. but yeah, I'm really excited to see him make something that's like very, you can tell it's meant to be very provocative in this kind of same sense as something like Malcolm X or Do the Right Thing, like a kind of call to action, but, you know, for our times.
Mm. And then we got Sorry to Bother You.
Yes. That's one I'm excited for too, but also it's very interesting to me that I'm happy that there's two films that are coming out that are about code switching, essentially. So two black men pretending to be a white person on the phone in order to dispel racism or something. But Sorry to Bother You just looks like it's taking more of an angle towards capitalism and just kind of the daily grind. But it's just looks like this mad thing via Michel Gondry or something.
Yeah,
but
it's got great artwork as well. It already looks like there's some great iconography and imagery that's coming out just in the stills. Really excited for that one. And the last one, I think, is actually already one that all three of you have seen, and that's Eighth Grade.
Eighth Grade's a big one. It's just a really lovely film. But just, and I remember when I saw it, a lot of people were saying to me, just like, I don't know how Bo Burnham knows my childhood. It has this really great approach to just this universal kind of angst of being a teenager and kind of all these growing pains. It's just a really lovely first feature from him.
And
really
you,
funny.
You did sadly say that this will be the end of dabbing.
I proclaimed this as it should be the final nail in the coffin for the dab. Because it's agonising.
I'm going to hold that torch. Keep that torch burning for as long as I can.
I mean, if you watch this film
because
and you still want to dab,
officially a dabbing fan podcast. Yeah. We back it.
Yeah. Officially.
Yeah. We officially we're taking the moment to officially endorse
we're
dabbing.
Gonna endorse dabbing.
Yeah. All right. Kelly, we made it around the table. What are your three?
Okay, so the first one is Gus Van Sant's new film, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think it got mixed reviews. But still Joaquin Phoenix, Rooney Mara.
Yeah. And he's always gonna be a director people are curious about.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. So that one is definitely up on the list. The other one is Disobedience by Sebastian Lelio.
Yeah.
Very excited for that one. Been waiting a long time to see it. I know we've got to wait quite a while longer, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think it's got a November release or something.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I know, it's ridiculous.
But this is Sebastian Lelio. He just won the Oscar for foreign language film with A Fantastic Woman, which was obviously a big Curzon release. And that was on Home Cinema, and Disobedience will be doing the same. And this is Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams?
Yeah.
Two Rachels.
Rachels.
It's nice amazing to see that he's doing interracial relationships.
Okay, it's very good.
Wow,
that is exceptional.
This was a great podcast with me, Jake, and Kelly because Cam's entirely been cut out.
And I think the third one I put on was High Life, Claire Denis' film with Robert Pattinson and who's the other one? Oh. Juliette Binoche.
The other one.
Oh, there's one.
You always
I
put them together,
like
don't you?
Yeah. And Binoche. The
they're just the dynamic duo.
Yeah.
Newman and Redford. Pattinson and Binoche. I hate to burst your bubble there, Kelly, but I think that's a 2019 release.
Is it?
Yeah, they've delayed it now.
Literally, as you started talking about it,
well, I've got another one.
What's your other one, quickly?
Damien Chazelle's one.
First Man. Space stuff.
Yeah. Space stuff. Where are we going to go? Moon.
Yes.
How do we know they're going to the moon? Write moon on the blackboard and underline it. Wait, are there any questions? Yeah, where are we going again, Kyle Chandler?
I've underlined it, mate. It's on the other blackboard. And it takes so long to get to the moon, it's taken me two blackboards. And I've had to draw a huge line across both of them, one into the other, to get to the moon.
Right, I think that's all we've got time for now. We've got you all very excited for the next 6 months of cinema in the UK in Curzon and on Curzon Home Cinema as well. Talking about that, you can still watch In the Fade, which was the focus of last week's show. And I went on a little football search because maybe there are some crossover fans out there who are also going to Curzon's and watching the World Cup. Bend It Like Beckham's on Curzon Home Cinema.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I
love that movie.
Yeah, really, really good. So I was very happy to see that on there. Now, if you've got any thoughts on your most anticipated releases for the next 6 months, please email us at podcast@curzon.com for next week's show. We'd love to read them. And in the meantime, you can subscribe, leave us a review or comment, rate us out 5. That would be wonderful. Next week, we've got Haifa Al-Mansour, the director of Mary Shelley, on the show. And we're going to be talking about that because that's actually going to be out in cinemas and on demand next Friday. In the meantime, though, you can follow me at Jake H. Cunningham on Twitter. You can follow Campbell at...
Campbell A. Campbell.
You can follow Sam at...
I think I'm SamHowlett_1.
Yes, and you'll find Kelly enjoying her life because she's not a slave to these social media machines. But that's all we've got time for. So, Kelly, would you like to say bye?
Goodbye.
Bye from Sam.
Goodbye.
Bye from Campbell A.
Goodbye.
Bye from me. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.